This is the Love Foco Show.
We also have seen people putting off medical care because they can't afford it, or they're afraid to come in because of their immigration status, or they're afraid about that bill that they're going to get. But delaying medical care is never a good idea.
Welcome to the Love Foco Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and changemakers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Hey everyone, Jeff Faust here, your host for the Love Foco Show. So excited about today's conversation. I sit down with Kevin Unger, the president and CEO of UC Health. I think you're going to love this conversation. I know I did. We got to talk about organizational change, innovation, the coming changes to the medical world and providing medical care for our growing community, and all of the ways that UC Health, under Kevin's leadership, are giving back to our community. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, and thanks for listening. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for sitting down with me. I've been looking forward to this conversation all week because the work that you and your organization is doing in our city is incredible. For those of you who are tuning in, Kevin is the, what do we call you, CEO?
Yep, president and CEO of our North Market for UC Health.
For UC Health, so an incredible employer. Obviously, a lot of lives impacted by hospitals and medical care in Northern Colorado. And so, like I said, I've been looking forward to this conversation. But I start every kind of podcast on the Love Foco Show the same way. Uh-huh. I just try to dig in a little bit to your Fort Collins origin story. So tell me a little bit, like, did you transplant in? Were you born here? Tell me, what is your Fort Collins origin story?
Well, sounds good. Yeah, my story actually started at Poudre Valley Hospital. My parents moved here in 1967. They honeymooned. They're both originally from Nebraska. They went to University of Nebraska at Kearney, and after they got married, they honeymooned up in Estes Park. And so they rolled through Fort Collins and decided that's where they wanted to call home. So 1967, they moved here. In 69, which I'm, you know, given my age, but...
yeah, you just dated yourself on
exactly.
The podcast.
I was born at Poudre Valley Hospital, and then, of course, grew up in Fort Collins with Riffenberg Elementary School, and then Lesher Junior High at the time, now middle school.
Yep.
And then Fort Collins High School. After graduation, just proceeded to go to Colorado State University, and then got
my true hometown guy.
Very hometown. And then I did migrate to Denver for 6 to 8 years. I can't remember. I'll have to ask my wife exactly how long we lived down there. I did get my master's degree down in Denver at University of Colorado at Denver, and then migrated back to Fort Collins and got my PhD and my doctorate at CSU.
Okay.
And so definitely a Ram, and you know, love Fort Collins and have seen a lot of changes. And so when I was young, and once again dating myself, Harmony Road was, you know, real, it was a dirt road, and there were just farms out on Harmony.
Yeah.
And I remember the stories about the McDonald's on College that is by the new King Supers now. You know, they built that in the middle of nowhere, and everybody's wondering why would they build it so far out of town, which is, of course, the center of town right now.
Right,
and so,
right.
So a lot of changes in Fort Collins, and, you know, got a great education here and still have family. My sister, she runs the Alumni Association over at CSU,
okay.
Christy Bollender. And my dad was superintendent of schools for quite a while and was always with Poudre School District. So truly, you know, a lot of deep roots here in the Fort Collins.
Yeah, it sounds that way. It sounds like, I mean, obviously you and all these schools, Riffenberg and Lesher and, did you say Fort Collins?
Fort Collins High School.
And CSU. But that's a little interesting part of your family history that your dad's always been involved in the city too. I mean, I don't blame them, first of all, driving from Nebraska to Estes to be like, let's figure out how we can move to here.
This is a good place.
You know, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, and so I've done the trip back to see family through Nebraska, and God bless it. I mean, I just can't imagine being like, let's hunker down here. No, you're going to keep driving. You're going to get to the Front Range. Yeah. But he's been involved in the city. I mean, it
sounds
superintendent. That's a quite the leadership role as well. So
you
grew up, I mean, you must have in your family system or your family DNA or something, leadership, giving back to the community, having a role in the community you live in. Tell me a little bit about, like, even growing up and seeing that modeled, that had to have an impact on you as a boy and a young man and as an adult in our community as well.
Well, absolutely. Well, my parents were, you know, very involved in everything from, you know, the Rotary Clubs to the food banks to the Poudre School District Foundation to the hospitals, you name it. They had kind of their fingers in all of it. And so definitely role modeled, you know, that giving back to the community. I don't know. It's just when you, and I, trust me, I've been outside of Fort Collins, but it's you're hard pressed to find a better place than, you know, Northern Colorado to live. I haven't found it yet. So, you know, as you travel around, there's a lot of great places in the United States, but none of them kind of add up to what we have here.
And there's a lot of things tipped in our favor.
I agree.
I've met a lot of people that have transplanted in, of course, but I've also met a lot of natives like yourself who, you know, born, raised here, whatever, went to college here, and maybe left for a season. But there's just like a magnetic pull back to this space. And it's what we love about this. I mean, it's an incredible place to live.
It is. And, you know, it seems like a lot of students, you know, they can't wait to get out of here. It's like as soon as they graduate from high school, they're going out of state and they're doing this and that. But then they quickly realize, you know, just it's a special place. And it's home. So, of course, we're biased, but I always view Northern Colorado and kind of this community as a petri dish. Anything's possible. So if something doesn't work somewhere else in the United States, that doesn't mean that you can't make it happen here in Northern Colorado just because everybody's, you know, their heart's in the right place and everybody's kind of rowing in the same direction. And I think things are possible here that aren't possible in other communities.
So. I think that, so I've been here for about 8 years and I've learned so much about kind of like what you said, what's in the water, just in the cultural DNA. We're rowing in the same direction. There's big thinkers, there's innovative thinkers. I mean, there's, you know, even back to the McDonald's that seemingly was put in the middle of nowhere. Well, someone had the foresight to say, actually, like everything's growing this way.
Exactly.
I don't know, though. It doesn't seem like every city can capture that.
I agree.
So there is something really unique. Of course, people who predated us and our leadership, but there's something about this area. It attracts thinkers. That kind of thinking is rewarded. What do you think kind of makes up some of that culture? Because I just, people have to want to replicate that and somehow they can't.
Right. Well, I think there was some very brave individuals that, you know, we benefited from. The Everetts, you know, they came, they developed Fort Collins, but they also gave back, you know, the Gene Markleys, the everybody who kind of preceded us had a vision for what they wanted this community to look like, and then they put their money where their mouth was. And so they invest in things that are important, and they're always there. I mean, And we're always there. They, you know, many of our founders have passed, but they were just really good people that wanted the best for Northern Colorado. And they put that interest above their own and helped kind of develop that culture that I think we're still benefiting from today.
Yeah, that's incredible. Maybe we continue that legacy in our own roles and everybody who's leading anything. Maybe they could just continue on. I'm curious. So, you know, Riffenberg, Lesher, Fort Collins, then CSU. Now you're the president and CEO of UC Health, which is a really large employer and organization. What are you studying in college? And like, where did this like gear to lead and you know, take the reins of things, where'd that come from? I mean, was it always there, or did it emerge over time, or?
I think that's an interesting question. I always wanted to get, so I meandered around in my career and, you know, kind of was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And my wife was ready to, you know, strangle me because I kept going back to school, and then I changed my mind and I do this and do a little of that. And I worked with, you know, some real estate development companies. I worked with Oppenheimer Mutual Funds. I ran limousine service there for a short stint. Did all sorts of different things. And then was drawn to healthcare, mostly just because I felt like I had some leadership skills, maybe business skills that could be transferable. Healthcare, we get to help people. It is this pure service industry. The people that are drawn to healthcare, they're there to do good work and help fellow human beings. And so I've been fortunate enough to, you know, you can tell the culture of a place almost immediately when you walk through the doors, whether there's eye contact, people are friendly, they're willing to walk you to where you need to go, you know, are they having fun together? Are they talking to each other? You can tell if they're taking care of each other. And they're there truly to serve our patients. And so, you know, it was such a nice fit when I finally kind of landed in the healthcare space. And then my goal from day one was to get back to Poudre Valley Hospital. And so when an opportunity presented itself, and I was too young and didn't have the experience, but, you know, you need somebody to take a chance on you. And I was hired at PVH. I've been able to really grow in place, meaning that as the system's grown, I've been able to grow into new different roles and different experiences. And it's been a really, really fun journey. And we have remarkable people that are living our mission every single day. We're a private not-for-profit entity, meaning we see anybody that walks through our doors, regardless of their ability to pay, your gender, your faith, your background, you're gonna be treated if you need healthcare. And so that is quite rewarding as well. And then it is complicated healthcare. And so, you know, it's in my time, I keep saying I should be more competent than I am at this stage in my career, but healthcare changes so dramatically and so rapidly that it gives me an opportunity to continuously learn. Yeah. And as soon as you think you kind of have it figured out, the rules change and you have to kind of reinvent yourself and new technologies, new providers, you know, different challenges just keep popping its head up. So it's been a good fit for me.
Well, we got to talk about all of that. Okay. I want to get into that, but I want to circle back to something because we're sitting across from each other recording this podcast. Not everybody can see this, but I asked, you know, what did you study and how did you find
where,
and you kind of smirked just a little bit. So, I take it that you weren't like a biology major, double major, chemistry, like the typical medical route. Maybe you didn't take So, I mean, tell me about, like, what did you study? Was it business administration or what was it?
Kinda. So, well, my teachers growing up are absolutely shocked that I get to do what I do because I was not the best student. I wasn't the worst student, but I wasn't, yeah. I wasn't like, they would not have pegged me as like, okay, well, yeah that guy is gonna, you know, end up
he's gonna running. Run a huge company. So,
right.
Yeah.
No. That, it was none of that. As a matter of fact, when I got the job back at Poudre Valley, a number of my former teachers were.
Which is where you were born.
Which is where I was born.
It's all full circle. So, yep. I mean, it's all coming back.
Yep, but they were shocked. And so they were like, yeah, okay, well. And it was those teachers and professors that, you know, spent a little extra time with me and kind of helped
now,
me.
Now, was it,
through.
Were you just like in the back of the room, like messing around, or was it a GPA thing?
No,
or
I don't know. I wasn't always messing around. I just wasn't the greatest student.
Yeah.
And I just didn't see the need to learn a lot of that stuff, I guess. But yeah, my sister, my younger sister, you know, she used to be my math mentor. Like, she'd help me with my math, and I was like, well, this is, you know, humiliating. But, you know, it just didn't necessarily click. And so the people part of it did, of leadership. So that's kind of how I made my living, is, you know, connecting and then doing what you say you're gonna do, following through. And, you know, we're only as good as our word. And so as an administrator, that's like your currency. And so I've been able to, you know, connect with people. And, you know, we have a vision within the health system. We have great people helping us do good work. And really the bottom line is we always think that if you're providing the highest quality care, everything else falls into place. And so that's, you know, you have to build the culture to allow that to happen. So
yeah, it's interesting too, right? Like, the more leaders I meet, sometimes I meet the leaders, you know, who are running a company or organization, inventor, innovator, whatever it is. And they were like always the smartest kid in the room. I found though that that's rare. That's unique. That's the exception, not the rule. That more often, it's this EQ, not necessarily 100%. IQ. It's this ability to manage people, work with people, call out the best in them, you know, hold people accountable in not weird ways, but like really appropriate ways. That begins to differentiate maybe from the smartest people in the room to the best leaders in the room.
Yep, because you can hire the smartest person, perfect grades, blah, 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 but if they can't work in a team, or they can't get along with people, it's not gonna work. It doesn't matter what degree, what GPA.
Well, I've only had someone ask me what my GPA is one time. It was the first job I got. And then after that, they didn't make it that far down on my resume. They just wanna know what I did last.
How
it worked.
I think I've had my degree validated that I did actually get the degree, but I don't think anybody's ever looked at my GPA nor really care.
But it's interesting because part of your story, so you went back to school and you got more degrees.
Correct.
So and what I think, like, you must have always been a learner or something that, that threw you back into.
I wonder if it was because I wasn't a great student that going back and getting the next degree kind of validated that maybe potentially. But yeah, I was, so I was a business major and then I had the opportunity while I was a senior to go on a program called Semester at Sea, where we were able to get on a ship and travel around the world and experience different cultures. So it was 90 days of traveling around the world. I know, very rough, but it was very enlightening and very eye-opening just to realize how fortunate we are to live in the United States. And what we've been given and take for granted on a daily basis. I was a kind of a business major going into that, but in order to graduate on time, a gentleman, Dr. Jack Briette, and Dr. Briette's still in the community, he said, you know, if you, he had been on Semester at Sea, and he said, if you transfer into the sociology department, you'll be able to graduate on time because the business school will not take your credits from Semester at Sea. And I said, I'm ready to get out of here. So I graduated with a sociology degree from CSU and then went back, got my Master of Science in Health Administration. and my MBA from CU Denver, and then came back and got my PhD in organizational development and change.
Yep.
And so it was...
I bet that's a fascinating PhD.
It's pretty intriguing.
Especially now, everything's changing.
100%.
There's organizational change all the time, and how you manage change, and you, because anxiety always spikes when there's change. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has to be paying dividends in spades for you.
It's all change. Yep. And, you know, specifically during the pandemic, it was amazing the rate of change. So things that would take us 6 months traditionally, you know, were taking us a month. Stuff that would take us a month, take it as a week, you know, stuff that took us a week takes us hours. Yeah. And it was intriguing to see how quickly we can move when we need to move, and the kind of the thinking that goes around that. And so, you know, we're very good at rolling things out continuously. We're not always great at managing the change that goes along with that, or smoothing the workflow to make sure that, you know, it's all working together. So I
just find myself curious. I read this book called Canoeing the Mountains by Bo Slinger. It was a lot about change and navigating change. Do you have like a go-to, like if I were to, like, I want to learn more about this.
Right.
I lead a smaller organization than you do, but we're always dealing with change.
Of course. And,
COVID was interesting because I actually came to my leadership position pre-COVID.
Right.
And everybody said, hey, we've never done it like this. The last guy never did it. And then COVID hit and that phrase never got used again.
Right?
Everything was like, what on earth do we do now?
Right.
But do you have like a go-to? I mean, what's some great stuff out there that I could pick up and read
or research when it comes
to change?
I'm into this podcast called Acquired. And what they do is they dig deep into very highly successful organizations. And so a lot of them are in the tech industry. Sometimes it's, you know, Costco. They've dug into Microsoft, Apple. They just recently looked at Epic Systems, which is our electronic health record. They've done Hermes, which is a fashion company. They've done Louis Vuitton. They've done Taylor Swift and kind of dug into her success. But they go super deep, like 3.5, 3 to 4 hour kind of in-depth soup to nuts.
Yep.
And just there's some lucky breaks along the way.
Sure.
There are some, you know, being positioned for when the right time hits. And you realize that there really aren't any overnight successes. Everybody has been, every kind of company that's had success, they had a good, strong foundation. And then, you know, good things happened just because they got
poised.
Some breaks.
They were
It's
really interesting, though, because I think they kind of intuitively know overnight success or self-made man or woman or is a lie.
Sure.
There's still an allure to that.
Oh, yeah.
There's still like maybe a shred of belief that could be true. No, it turns out we should listen to the podcast Acquired and realize, no, that's not true. That doesn't actually happen that way.
Yeah, very rarely, you know, they did a podcast on Porsche and basically they ended up with a contract where they got, I think $100 or 5% of every Volkswagen sold through the German government. And that's what allowed them to stay in business.
Really?
Yeah, without that like break, they would not be here. Of course, Bill Gates, he was, if you've read Good to Great, he had done his, I don't remember the secret number, but he had X number of hours programming, and he was poised when, you know, the time was right.
Yep.
And so there's usually very few absolute overnight successes, I guess, unless you win the lottery.
Yeah.
But for the most part, everybody, you know, they worked hard and they, you know, really were passionate about what they did. And when the timing was right, they're ready to make hay while the sun was up. So.
Let me ask a leadership question for you, because you're obviously, you know, you're a big leader in our community. You had mentioned something just a few minutes ago that when the position opened at PVH, mm-hmm. you know, you jumped into that. What role was that, by the way?
It was a vice president of planning and strategic development.
Okay.
And so I had come from a
not an entry level position.
No. and Rulin Stacy, who was the president of the hospital at the time, he took, I think I was cheap. I think that he could save some dollars. Plus, he knew my father, which I think helped.
Sure.
And then that opened some doors, and he was just willing to take a chance on me. And then shortly after that, I was in that role for about 2 years, and then jumped into a vice president of operations role. And I didn't really have a pretty big role for not having operations experience. And so people kind of rallied around me. They knew I was young, green bean, and I didn't act like I knew everything. I relied on good people to do their jobs and kind of kept out of their way and learned along the way. But it was more of that EQ than, you know, knowledge that allowed me to kind of pursue some of these different positions. So.
Well, you had mentioned in that journey that you got in and you were able to grow mm-hmm. as the system grew.
Yep.
But not everybody can do that. I mean, we won't name any names, but we could probably like cycle through names of people who actually, they just fit here. Like it.
Yep.
It's just where they, you know, and they mm-hmm. can't morph with the times. They can't transition with the time.
Sure.
What do you think helped you do that?
Probably stupidity to some degree.
but that was not the answer. That's great. Well, that is a great answer.
Well, I was always willing to apply and do things I didn't know how to do and kind of learn along the way. I think I was curious just how stuff worked. When you come out of school, they give you a very good theory, but the practical pieces, you know, the day-to-day is not what you walk away with. And so I was just curious how stuff worked, and people were willing to help me and give me time to learn along the way. And so I was just blessed that way. But I always encourage young leaders to apply for positions they're not qualified for. And then work hard. Too many people are looking too far down the road. If you do your job today really, really well, good things will happen. Doors will open and you become reliant on person X. You know, we can't live without them because everything we've given them, they just knock it out of the park, no matter how big, how little it is. And so, you know, just make sure you're doing a good job and good things will happen. And with that said, I also envy those people that they just find their deal. And that's what turns them on. They don't need the next promotion. They're very happy and content doing what they do. And so this is a mini city that UC Health. We have people, that do all sorts of different things, and bless them, because there are things that, you know, I'd last 10 minutes doing that people have, you know, done for 45, 40, 45, 50 years. And it just takes different personalities and putting together the right teams and making sure, you know, everything we're working as a team and rowing in the same direction.
Well, it's an interesting position that you're in because you do have so many different types of employees. And of course, you know, mm-hmm. there's an organization this size, there's a lot of different leaders in this organization. It's not like everybody reporting directly to you. I mean, it's impossible.
Not even close.
But you know, my dad was a doctor, and so like I know just growing up in my home that sometimes the hospital administration office worked well with the doctors, and sometimes he'd come home cranky.
Yep.
You know, but it's not just doctors that work here. You've got kitchen staff and security staff and maintenance staff. You got, mm-hmm. I mean, I think you're right on. I mean, this is like a mini city.
Yep.
And it's multiple cities, by the way.
Yep.
Because you guys are all over Northern Colorado at this point. I mean, what a fascinating role that you get to find yourself in.
Oh, it's the greatest role ever.
Impacting all kinds of different folks.
Yep, and I love this role because I kind of have a short attention span. And so You know, I could be interfacing with the community or with employees or with our physicians or you name it. Every day is a new day, and that's what's really keeps me getting out of bed in the morning and being excited to come to work. So.
Yeah.
And it is work, so some days are better than others. But
sure.
But for the most part, I get, you know, I got one of the greatest jobs in Northern Colorado for sure. So
that's good. I wanna ask about something that you had mentioned. We were talking around the COVID time about how things were changing, and they're changing quickly.
Yep.
That probably hasn't slowed down for you in the medical world. I mean, with AI, with robotic surgery, with transplants, my son has a medical diagnosis, and it seems like since he was diagnosed, the advancements in that field
are incredible. Off the charts.
How do you keep up? Well, you've got to be learning stuff all the time. I mean,
everything's
changing. I guess
that's
change background, so that might help.
Yep. Well, I don't know if it does or not, but yeah, the medical field is changing so rapidly. It's you can't keep up. AI is awesome. We're doing what's now called ambient AI for charting. So your primary care doctor, your specialist may ask if they can record the visit on their cell phone. It has the ability to do some amazing things. My last primary care visit, I visited my doctor, and we talked about a lot of different things, and that's how my visits go. You know, we're talking about a call agreement, or we're talking about X, Y, and Z, or changes within the health system. He used this ambient AI, and he showed me my chart at the end of our visit, and somehow it was able to weed out all of our chit-chat, even though it was still medical related. It only documented our medical discussion, and he said it charted much more accurately than he would have been able to by going back. The beauty of that is that he's now having dinner with his family instead of charting for 2.5-3 hours to catch up from the day that he or she just had. So, and then robotic surgery. Yeah, that, you know, that's come a long ways. Just tonight we're gonna be having what's called robot night, I don't know what it is, but basically Da Vinci has a surgical robot that we're bringing into one of the meeting rooms here, and students in the community and staff can go and play with this robot. But it's quite amazing what they can do. So it's moved from laparoscopic surgery to robotic surgery, where we can get into locations you couldn't before, and minimizes blood loss, and just does a little bit of a cleaner job potentially by using that technology. We have new. The list just goes on. Every time I go into our operating rooms or up on the floors, there's just something new and innovative that, you know, just
that is so. I mean, that's fascinating. Even talking about the robots, I can hear my dad, who, you know, he, like, one of his favorite topics, and he doesn't listen to this, I can just say whatever I want.
Sure.
One of his favorite topics is to complain about his residency compared to current residents, you know, and he's like, they just don't know. I'm like, Dad, they're using robots. It's a different world. It is totally different than when you went to residency in med school.
Well, there's so many procedures right now that are, you know, if you're a gamer, I think it gives you a leg up. This new Bronc robot that we have, it's called an Aeon. I think that's the name of the company, but it's basically, you can do a Bronc, get into the lungs, and it's run by a rollerball. It looks like, you know, what would it be like, Frogger, that video game,
Know,
it's got that, had that rollerball, and you can get in there and see things that you couldn't previously. We used to have to, if there was a nodule, you'd have to wait until the nodule got to a certain size to remove it. With this new Aeon Bronc, you can take that. Yeah. If you need to, we can have the pathologist right there to
just a little rollerball.
Yeah,
I mean,
you said
Frogger. The thing I thought of, honestly, was like Golden Tees, the old bar game where you play golf. You got a beer and you're playing golf.
Yeah, and you're rolling
it
as fast as you
can. Rolling it forward.
That's
yeah.
exactly what it looks like.
Well, who knew? It's preparation. Yeah. I could have a change of career here.
100%. but yeah, things are changing rapidly. So, you know, we used to get 15, 17, 20 years out of an MRI or a CT scanner, and you know, within 5 to 7 years, they're almost obsolete just because things are changing so quickly.
And so all the chips,
all the
tech,
linear acceleration.
It's like cars,
everything.
Right? I mean, this is happening in cars 100%. Too. Like the first car I had was a crank down window.
Right.
I haven't seen one of those in a few years.
Manual transmission, most likely.
Yep.
Yep. Exactly. And so. But the rate of change in the medical industry, just because there, you know, it's an industry that finds innovation just because it's a big market. And so, we see a lot of changes in a short amount of time. Yep.
Oh, so interesting. And thanks for letting me just go on, you know, rabbit trails on org change or new tech or whatever that is.
Sure.
I'd love to talk a little bit about UC Health and we could talk about your life too, as whatever you want to chat about. But you know, one of the things I love to talk with people about when I'm interviewing them is, not just their origin story, not what they love about, but how they're loving our city, what they're doing to make a difference. Mm-hmm. An organization of your size, obviously a major employer, if not the top employer, like maybe you and CSU can go head to head on who's employing more people, but that's impacting the community in an incredible way.
Sure.
I see UC Health's name on a lot of things, the way you're investing in the community. Talk to us a little bit about the way you feel like your organization's loving our city well, the way it's giving back, and you know, just want to celebrate some of the work that you guys are doing in the community.
That's nice of you to kind of bring it around to that. UC Health is an organization that's always, you know, worked within the community to try to better people's lives. So we currently work with close to 200 separate entities within Northern Colorado, and partner with all these different entities. As I mentioned earlier, that's where the secret sauce is. And so instead of everybody trying to recreate the wheel, working together and everybody kind of fitting in and filling that niche or that space has been incredibly important. We recently, and it's probably not even that recent, if I say something happened a year ago, most likely it was 2 years ago. If I say it was 5 years
we
ago,
won't fact check
it. It's probably 10 years ago. We now have a food bank at our family practice residency program, just because if you are not on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you're not getting those basic needs met, which is food and shelter, it's very hard to live a healthy lifestyle. And so our residents can prescribe food. Basically, it truly is open to anybody. You don't have to be a patient of Family Medical Center, but the need and the, you know, our ability to at least help out in that area has been quite remarkable to watch. We're in the schools trying to teach healthy habits through the 5210 programs. Our Aspen Club, of course, does a lot of education and brings in different topics and speakers for our senior group, which I am now one of them. I am now eligible for membership within the Aspen Club. Yeah, exactly.
Discounts are coming your way.
That's right. But you know, when there is a need, this community steps up in a big way, and you just see it time and time and time again. And so that's what I think really makes this place tick, is people's willingness to give up their time, their energy, and their finances if there's things that need to get done. And so we support the Meals on Wheels program. And so
there's like a really incredible amount of nonprofits in Northern Colorado.
Big time. It's incredible.
The amount of philanthropic work that is originated here. It goes well beyond Northern Colorado, of course, but I've been amazed at that. There's so many organizations, so many people are like, yeah, I don't necessarily have the time, but I'll figure out how I can find the time to give back. And I think some of that probably comes just from the socioeconomic kind of status of Northern Colorado. It's you know, it's a little higher than maybe some parts of the United States, so there's some expendable income there.
But there's still a lot of need. There's still a lot of need,
too. There is, and it's and that's not changing.
Not at all. It's because getting more difficult.
The community, how have you seen, maybe that you've lived here for a while, like how have you seen the needs change and emerge over the years?
You know, it's expensive to live right now. And so and everything's getting slashed. And quite often it's our vulnerable population that takes the brunt of the Medicaid cuts or the SNAP benefits or you name it. It's a population that can't advocate for themselves. And so as you know, housing prices and rent and groceries and inflation, there's just an ever-growing need for people just to meet their basic human needs. We also have seen people putting off medical care because they can't afford it. Or they're afraid to come in because of their immigration status, or they're afraid about that bill that they're gonna get. But delaying medical care is never a good idea. If somebody needs to be treated, we're going to treat you. And please spread the word that, you know, a lot of times the emergency department's a very expensive place to get your care, but do not avoid it if you need to utilize medical services. We have sliding fee schedules. We'll work with, you know, our lower income population. We write off just here in Northern Colorado close to $250 million in uncompensated care annually, just because that's our mission within the organization. So.
Yeah, well, those needs aren't going to go anywhere.
Nope.
No, they're just population growing. Increases, all these things just continue to shift. I mean, it's incredible. And like you said, people get into this business because they want to care for people. They want to make difference. And
And I work with some amazing people. Our staff are, they treat people like their family, neighbors, and I think that's a lot of the secret sauce. And our physicians, I think how everybody works together, the nursing staff, administration, physicians, is what really differentiates us.
Yeah.
And so we have little Brahms lullaby, baby just born here at Medical Center of the Rockies.
That's so sweet. When you're in the middle of an interview and you hear that, you know, you can just almost feel the, but what it's an interesting place to live too, because you've also have chaplains walking around here caring for people who are experiencing tragedy.
Yep.
Tragedy in big ways. And all of this is found under
There's
one
highs
roof.
And lows under one roof. That's for sure.
Yeah. Switching gears just a little bit, I find myself curious because I interviewed the mayor a little while ago, Ann Hutchinson. I got a chance to interview her, and one of the things that I've talked with them about is with the growing population, with the growing the increased cost of living, the challenge behind what we might call talent acquisition, or like, it's just more expensive to live here. And so how can I recruit the employees I need? How can I train them up from within? That's always the dream, but sometimes it's not readily available. So how is UC Health navigating some of like the talent acquisition pain points?
Right, well, we live in a wonderful place to recruit to. So we have a leg up. We manage the hospital, a few hospitals in Wyoming, as well as in Nebraska. And their challenges are very different than our challenges as it relates to recruiting in a workforce. We are onboarding here in Northern Colorado. I do new employer orientation every single week. And we are onboarding between 40 and 120 employees a week within Northern Colorado.
That's amazing.
That's also challenging because how do you ensure that everybody understands who we are, what we're about?
We started our conversation talking about culture.
Yep, the mission, the vision. And so it takes a very talented group of leaders within the organization to make sure that people find their place. We have a very high first and second year turnover rate.
Okay.
It is, you know, close to 20%. Our overall turnover rate's hovering around 10. We're trying to get into the single digits.
I was just going to say, what would you like it to be at?
Yeah.
So somewhere in the single digits.
Somewhere in the single digits would be leading the industry. And we're, you know, we're right there. But people leave within the first couple years because they don't feel their sense of place. You know, maybe they didn't connect with their boss. They don't have that friend at work that, you know, they feel that connection. And so we're really putting a lot of time and energy into that. If we can fix our first year turnover rates, then we're really hitting on all cylinders.
Yep.
But people come in, and during COVID, it was quite intriguing because just like your dad, there's different levels of training coming out of school. But during COVID, many of our employees, you know, new grads, had not even necessarily stepped foot in a patient room. You know, we were starting with how you enter a room, how you introduce yourself. Some of them, they leave because the job isn't what they thought it was. You know, you're dealing with, you know, bodily fluids and, you know, all sorts of different things that, you know, maybe not what they trained on. And so that is, I think, going to be our continuous challenge is how do we onboard appropriately, give people that feeling that they're part of the family, and then try to get them to stick around. Because once we get past that, like, year and a half, 2 year time frame, there's a very good chance I'll be celebrating 20, 30
retention
years.
Retention goes way up.
100%.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's that, that initial is where we're putting a lot of time and energy right
that
now.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think different worlds, obviously. I'm in the nonprofit world, more human services, even faith background myself. But, you know, for instance, I pastor a church on part of my job, and we always say people go to church for all kinds of different reasons,
sure,
but they stay for relationships. And
right,
it's not apples to apples, but, you know,
it is.
Your employees want to feel connected.
Of course.
They,
it's all about the
relationships.
They
have a sense of belonging, and yeah, exactly, they're part of a larger mission. And
They're part of a bigger...
Yeah. Well, that's hard to do in a orientation.
Yep.
And so that's got to live out a little bit. That's got to play out a little bit. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And our middle managers have the hardest job in the organization because they're managing up, they're managing down, and you know, they're trying to make that connection with our employees, and that's not always the easiest thing to make happen. But when it does, it's magical. So
yeah.
Yep.
Well, Kevin, this has been a great conversation. I'd
Thanks,
love
Jeff.
To finish with maybe one last thing.
Sure.
And you can kind of take this wherever you want to go.
Sounds good.
But you've lived in Fort Collins for a while.
Yep.
You know, born and raised here. UC Health is not slowing down. Doesn't seem like you're slowing down. Like you're living in a great community with a
Absolutely.
Great job and all these things. If you were to forecast the next 5 to 10 years
yep.
in where maybe you're headed or maybe mm-hmm. where UC Health is headed or even this community,
mm-hmm.
what are some of the things that you might want to say just about the future, the next little bit here?
Yep. Well, I think the future is bright. A big, strong focus for us is going to be on, of course, affordability of healthcare, and that's a national topic, and we're all kind of struggling in that area, but we're putting a lot of time and energy into access. So we want to make sure that we are meeting people where they're at, giving them an alternative to our emergency departments, and so you're seeing kind of a big boom of primary care expansion within the UC Health area. And so you'll see some new clinics opening up that will provide some of that access. Digital The ability to do virtual visits, I think, is gonna continue to grow and expand. And our app is kind of a secret weapon of ours. It's called My Health Connection. And you know, you can schedule, you can, you know, refill your scripts, you can do all sorts of different things just via that app. And I expect that we'll continue to see that grow and expand. But our goal is to grow with the community. And so we have some major things happening. We're gonna open up a new behavioral health unit at Poudre Valley Hospital, which will be 50 beds, about a 20% increase of what we currently have. We're seeing huge needs on the behavioral health front. New emergency department expansion at the Greeley Hospital. We have a new tower going up here at Medical Center in the Rockies that is really focused a lot on trauma ICU, critical care beds. And so we are here to meet the needs of the community. And as the community grows, we must grow as well. And so that's what it's taking at this point. We're also, you know, depending on kind of how legislation plays out, we're gonna have to always figure out how to do more with less. And we're no different than any other organization. But technology can take us quite a ways, but for the most part, we are a service-oriented entity. And so it's very hard to, automate bedside care, and we do a lot of that. And so it's just gonna have to continue to have new, fresh thinking, new minds, solving this Rubik's Cube over the next several years. And yep. I truly would think I'd be more competent at this stage in my career as I am, but the changes are so rapid. And as soon as you kind of figure out something, then the rules change and you have to kind of retrench and rethink. Yeah. And
well, it's time you said Rubik's Cube. It's like, yep. I've seen the elementary ones with just, you know, four squares.
Yep.
I've seen the 3x3s, obviously. And there are Rubik's Cubes that are like twice that size.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what it feels like where we're headed.
I think you're right.
Your background, your education, your experience, I can see how all of these things are working together. So that you can kind of take this company into the next, you know, season. And well,
it's been a pleasure. And, you know, as I mentioned, Poudre Valley is celebrating its 100th year anniversary. And so, and I've been doing a lot of research on PVH specifically. And this is not new. From the day they opened up the hospital, they've been dealing with different challenges, mostly capacity as the community has grown. And so where I thought, you know, wow, we're really in a unexplored territory, that's been the history of the community.
And I mean, it would be interesting to figure this out. I don't know, but I imagine you have about as many employees as, like, what year Fort Collins had that many people?
That could be the case.
You know,
case.
I mean, like, you should find right. that year, like,
that'd
current today.
Yep.
We have this many employees as, like, the population in 1952 or something right. like that. You know, I mean, that would be an interesting
stat. It would be interesting. But. Yeah, we should look at it. So 1925, I'll pull up the whatever the population of Fort Collins was, and we'll see what that looks like. So, yeah.
Oh, super interesting. Well, thank you again for
thank
this conversation.
You, Jeff. Thanks for all you're doing. We appreciate it.
Yeah, so. You guys are, you know, major part. Cities can't be healthy and grow without great hospitals and great providers. And so, appreciate your leadership.
Thank you.
Appreciate your guys' presence in our community.
Thanks for having
loving
me.
Our city one life at a time. And, you know, that stacked on top of each other many, many times over. So,
it's been a pleasure. Thanks
for
having
me.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Love FOCO Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love FOCO and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.